while you're helping a good cause. That's how it works. And you don't stop the sale. After a while, if you begin to cut the price down, the first thing that happens, because see, the brokers and the supermarkets know boycotts on, and they know they've got extra leverage. They use it against the growers in bargaining. Not that they like us, but they see an opening, so they use it. And the first thing that happens when we call it a boycott, all of a sudden, the grape brokers and the supermarkets make a demand. They want better quality. That's automatic. Even you and I, we announce a boycott, the next day they're demanding better quality, which means better quality means less production. It means one of two things. Either the employer, because a lot of work is piece rate or combination hourly and piece rate. So what happens is that the grower, that the workers will produce less because they want better quality. The grower now has a choice of paying them more money, which we can't because the prices are beginning to go down or stable, they're not going to go up, or let the workforce work without getting a wage increase. That's where we come in. Right now, a strike could happen in grapes, a huge strike, because of the boycott. The boycott pressures the market, pressures the grower. There's not enough money. Workers don't get a, not only do they not get a wage increase, but they actually get a wage decrease because now they want, the more the boycott goes on, the more the demand from the supermarkets for better quality, which means the worker can produce less and get less money. And so at appropriate time, we come in and we call a strike after the boycott's well, and that's the end of them. This is going to happen twice, it's going to happen again. It takes time to get that done so that our information is that they're having a hard time selling their grapes. What has happened is that some very large companies have come into the grape business. And Dole just came in 2 years ago and bought all kinds of acreage. Now they're the biggest producer of grapes, the Dole pineapple people, Dole banana. Now they're big producers of grapes. And the larger the grower, the more impact we have on them. The more the spread, the more the boycott hits them. And so, how do we build a union where the workers have no rights? They're not protected under the law, except in California, but it doesn't work, so it's just the same for collective bargaining. You can't decide the issue of representation because in all states except California, but it doesn't work, so California is the same. People can't just go and have an election, a fair and free election, so workers can decide for themselves in an election conducted by the government whether or not they want the union and which union they want a union. But it's done without harassment, without pressure, without interference. It doesn't happen. You call an election, and the growers begin to fire workers to teach them a lesson. How could you vote? You had an election yesterday. If you had your employer at the polls saying, if you vote for Jerry Brown, I'm going to fire you, or whatever it was. That's pretty much what happens. We heard you're involved in the union, and out you go. How can you have a free election? How can you organize people? How can they have the freedom to express themselves as other workers have under the federal law, the industrial workers, and even the government workers? You can't. Farm workers are excluded from this legislation, this protection. It's not illegal to build a union, but the worker has no protection as he tries to build a union. Being fired, harassed, demoted, pressured to stay out of the union. Or the employer doesn't have to bargain with the union in good faith to come to an agreement on a contract without legislation. So how you do it? You know, the law passed back in 1935, 36, and when the law passed, President Roosevelt, the law was bottled up because the farm lobby would not let the bill go through because it included agricultural workers. So a farm lobby had it bottled up. To be able to pass it, they had to exclude the farm workers, and President Roosevelt said something like to the effect that, well, we're excluding a sizable number of workers, but we'll come back in a year or two and we'll cover them. Now we've got to do it so we can at least cover the industrial workers that are up in arms right now. And that was 1935. And they never came back and they never covered them. They never had the rights to build a union. The arguments were something like, well, we don't really need the law in agriculture because unions are not really viable. And besides, the workers aren't really Americans. So those are the reasons, the excuses that they were using in those days. To today, we don't have the law. And so what you do is go then to what we call public action. In the bus boycott in the South, Dr. King figured it right. They didn't really have the political power to do it politically, so they did public action. They boycotted the bus. And what it did, it did two things. They won the boycott, 380 some days, I believe. They won the boycott, but more important, forced the Supreme Court to bring a decision saying that segregation of the buses was illegal. But they beat the city because it became too darn expensive. Because who rode the buses? The black folk did. And they were boycotting it. And it works. When we boycott wines, we estimate wines take 3%. If you get 3% of people to stop drinking that wine, you've got a good boycott and you got a winnable boycott. And if it's a crop that's been processed and has been put into a bottle or a can or a box with a recognizable brand name and has longer shelf life, about 6%. Now, because Americans do not buy yet produce by label, you don't buy label A grapes or label D potatoes. Americans buy produce by how it looks, the price, and how they feel. And so that when you do a grape boycott, you can't do it by labels, you do it generically. We say boycott all grapes, in this case except wines and races, because they're separate industries. Not that they don't use pesticides, but the fight is too big to do everything, so we're trying to narrow it down to the table grape first. And that's how it works. So now you think it doesn't work? Let me tell you, it does work. We've done 51 boycotts in 30 years of activity, and most of them have worked. Some have worked instantly. We threatened a boycott against Coca-Cola. It's a very recognizable name, and they didn't want to fight. They came and said, can we work the thing out? We sure worked it out. We covered over 2,000 workers in Florida with contracts, the best paid workers in the state of Florida for the last 16 years, with a pension plan and a medical plan and vacations and rest periods and a grievance procedure, and have a union. And we did the same thing with Chiquita Banana. We got a contract, not even have to boycott them. And then, of course, we took on huge boycotts, yellow wine and lettuce and grapes. You remember all that? And so we're here back again asking you. There are a lot of folks that have been boycotting, and you may not know about this, have been boycotting on our behalf for a long time. And we need you to help us once again. And let me end by saying, but there's a great irony to all of this. This country produces the greatest abundance of food in the history of the world, right here. So much food that oftentimes we have to spend government money, public money, to warehouse the food, to keep it, because we produce more than what we need. And the men, women, and children, 800,000 kids who work in the fields today to make ends meet. These are the men, women, and children who plant the seed and cultivate the plant and harvest the food, oftentimes don't have enough money to eat, enough food to eat after they fed everybody, the world, and everybody else. And that's the irony. That's the tragedy of it. How can we sit here and let this continue? It's terrible. It's a sin. Men, women, and children who feed us three times a day, oftentimes they go to bed hungry. This is the issue. This is a broader issue. We ask you to consider that, and we want to thank you for your attention. Don't forget to get your video as you leave the room. Please get the video. Show it to your family. Show it to your class. Let people know they'll see the video. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks. Thank you.
Caesar will take some questions, and please, if you have a question, speak directly and loudly so we can all hear you. And I'll point out the speakers, the questionnaire. Yes, sir, up there.
Mr. Chavez, could you let us know how Jerry Brown, as governor of California, responded to the UFW's calls for assistance?
Very well. Jerry Brown, is that exception I said, a few exceptions? Jerry Brown's not afraid of the growers. And besides, see, under Jerry Brown, we're able to do a number of important things for farm workers with his support. We passed the only real legislation giving workers the right to bargain, to organize and bargain collectively under Jerry Brown. And that's the only state that really has passed a law that gives those rights. Republicans came back and, of course, threw it out. I mean, it's not enforced anymore, but if that law passed. We also got unemployment insurance on par with the industrial workers. We were able to bring the workers fully into the workers' compensation laws. A lot of pesticide protection, like the laws dealing with the reporting. The growers in California have to get a permit if they're going to spray a pesticide that is restricted. They have to apply with the county agricultural commissioner and indicate what they're going to use, when, how, and who, and the place and how much. And that's how we can monitor what's being used. A number of those bits of legislation. So Jerry Brown is an exception. I was reading the papers where this county, he won in this county, someone told me. So I'm happy about that. Yes.
Yes, up there.
You know, we do have some examples of, like, mostly small family farms in California and outside of California who are now producing grapes totally organically. And what I'm told is that if they have produced the grapes with, chemical fertilizers and using pesticides and so forth, that it takes about 2 to 3, maybe 4 years to turn it around. And they never get down to 100% production compared when you spray like gibberellic acid or Fix. These are things that are terrible. Let me explain a little bit. Gibberellic acid is sprayed on the foliage of the grape when the grape bunches are like, they get big. And this comes and puffs off the grape. The grape you see it in the store is not originally, it's not that big. The grape is a small grape, but they're large because they were sprayed with gibberellic acid. And then you have to come back and trim the bunch because it gets so big, huge like this, and so it begins to rot inside because there's no, it grew very compacted because of the strength of the gibberellic acid. And so you come back and you have to trim the bunch as it's growing to be able to control the growth because it grows like maybe by 400-500% size. That's one. Then you have another additive called Fix, which is illegal. And we caught a guy here last year using Fix. Fix is used on grapes. It's like half a pound to an acre. But it's like unbelievable what it does. I've seen grapes after two or three or four freezes. You see the grape on the vine? Large, super larger than gibberellic acid, but they don't fall off the stem. They stay on the stem, even though it's way past the maturity date of that grape. They fix it onto the stem. It's illegal to do that. They do, but discounting that, in four years, about 95% of the production. But what happens is they get better money because an organic grape is always sweeter, a lot sweeter than a grape that was grown, you know, with chemical fertilizers. So some of those small growers are making it. And I think that, I'm sure, well, we have to do something, but I'm sure it can be done. The best example is rice. In the midst of the Sacramento Valley, where everything was sprayed, we had this courageous farmer who got up some years back and started growing rice today. His production is about equal, but he gets almost double for his rice because people want to have organic rice. I'm one of them. In fact, are there any organic growers here? You usually come to our meetings, no? Support them. So there are. I know there are some in your area. Any other questions?
Yes, right here.
I was wondering, the European community has a habit of restricting or completely banning products that they think have harmful chemicals in from other countries. Have they put a ban on grapes at all?
No, but we're working with some of the deputies. We got the people in Formosa about a month and a half ago. A group of students went out and demonstrated against grapes, and it all became, oh, it was a huge, people out there. And they were saying, look, we don't want the grapes with pesticides coming in. But there is enough support in Western Europe for our movement. Many of the socialist governments there would support us, and we now have somebody working with them.
Yes, back there.
I've seen a lot of changes take place. I remember when I started working back in the late 50s, late 40s. In fact, our first job was segregation. We fought the state of California in L.A. County, San Bernardino, Riverside, and San Diego, and Orange. And we beat them. We out-of-court settlements to integrate the schools. They had Chicano segregated. In Orange County, we went back to the judge a second time because that's where they brought in the equal but separate. They brought them to the same school, but they segregated the classrooms. That was 1948 or 49. The Chicanos in California, Texas, and places where there's a lot of them, they're going to take care of themselves. There's some unbelievable things that are happening. In the place where we're at, in California, you see what happens, which is what happens. Everyone, almost everyone, who's Chicano has been, has a score to settle with the growers, because either their folks themselves or their grandparents were exploited because they come from a basic agricultural community. And so a lot of people want to do something to get even though maybe third generation, because they know how their grandfathers and grandmothers were. Isn't that right? And people, that's the great support. We have tremendous support in that. What is happening in California? Give you like one example. In Dinuba has 69% Chicanos in the community and in school, and the school will not hire a Chicano teacher. They won't. They say there aren't any, or they can't find them, or whatever. And so they now have a. They went out and they went in and demonstrated at the school at the school board meeting, and some of the mothers were thrown in jail. Police came, roughed them up, and they went out and they came to us, and we said, "Look," and I said, "No, don't recall the school board. No, use public action. You'll get there quicker." It took us a little time to convince them. We selected a section in town, and we're boycotting them. And they're going crazy because we're asking people, Chicanos and us, don't buy in these stores. One happens to be owned by a member of the school board. Just happens to own the store. And I guarantee you that it's going to be quicker than trying to recall the school board, tie up the case in court forever and get a bad court decision because they're not friendly. But there's lots of movement in school boards and city councils and water boards and board of supervisors moving. That valley was the worst. We almost got a Chicano congressional seat. Almost. We'll get one in 10 years. So numbers. Now, what happens what happens with our people? I don't know. Some people come to college and they're young and they're enthusiastic and I'm going to come help my people. They go back and they really don't have people go and make a lot of money and comfort and move out of the barrio. But others don't. Others don't. Others come back and keep the faith and do the work. And we just watch people and they tell me where I travel around and I say, okay, we'll see. We'll see when you really get your diploma and you really, we'll see what's going to happen. Some more. What we're seeing, not the first, not the family who's, in other words, we're seeing second generation college graduates more committed than first generation college graduates. You know what I'm saying? If a father and mother went to college, that student more chances of doing more work for society, more getting involved more than if they're first generation college graduates. Not always, but we see kind of like a trend. And third generation even more. We have some kids working with us, their father went to school, their grandfathers went to college, their folks did, and they're in college now and they seem to be more committed to helping. So it's a good trend. We need more. Thank you. Okay. With the what?
The General Agreement on Tariffs and Trades. Do you work on that?
On concentrates?
So the General Agreement on
the International Trade.
The GATT. You're talking about the Mexican.
No. The GATT is a 106 member country.
No. I mean, we know a little bit what's happening. We don't know how to impact that.
Yes.
It's taken a lot of faith, I think, for you to stay with the struggle. And I'm wondering how, at this point in your life, you define the word faith and what role faith has played in your work.
Well, that's it. Believing that it can be done. I went 19 years. I've been around for 42 years. 19 years without a victory. In fact, in the town where I come from, there was a lot of jokes about me. They would say, Caesar, he's okay, but he's a little, you know. Or they'd say, no, he's lazy. He likes to be driving the car, organizing. He can't do anything. I went through all of that. In fact, my family used to get very upset. My brother used to get really upset because they used to make fun of me. He said, hey, forget him. Then that one day we won. I'm walking from home. This is a great story. I'm walking from my house to the union office across town. And I go by this Mercury auto agency. And I have a friend there, a girl there, Nellie, who works there, a friend of mine. She's in constant fighting with the owner because the owner thinks I'm convinced I'm a communist. I'm up to no good. When we won next morning, I'm coming by, and the guy has a cup of coffee, two cups of coffee, waiting for me in the street. Says, "Season one, we sure won. Boy, we got this." And Nellie's out there. She's going. And so I said, like, "Gee, I knew what was up because she used to report to me." She gives me a cup of coffee, and he says, "Oh, by the way," he places a whole block of cards, business cards, and says, "Here, your people are gonna need this." And I said, well, okay. You know, I didn't. I was too busy thinking about other things. She calls me. I call her. I said, what's wrong with your boss? You know what that son of a gun said? He said, you imagine? These workers were getting 80 cents an hour. They're getting over $3 an hour now. Can you imagine they cannot buy cars? So people who were outright against us would say, oh, we won. You know, we won. Everybody joins when you win, right? But it's not very hard to understand. Look, this is the way it works. How long does it take an author to get recognized? You know how long it takes? Can you imagine how long it takes an author to get recognized? Or a scientist or a teacher? It takes a long time. Or a movie star? Anyone. So why should we be an exception? So I used to say, man, if it took that guy 30 years to make it, I've got 19, I got 11 more to go. Because that's how it happens. Unions take a long time to build. Ups and downs until the grower community accepts the union, we'll be fighting. But they will accept it. They have to. It's too much of a turmoil not to do it. They'll see because the folks that were there, they're all dead. That we started back in the 60s, most are gone, they're retired. Their sons and daughters came in, and they're still fighting us hard, but that second generation is going to have to say, wait a minute, this is nonsense. We better get together and get things worked out, I think. So the faith, what faith comes from? From my faith. It's no trick. It's just you're here for a short time period of time in life, and you better do something. It's important. The most important thing is helping people. There's nothing as important as that. You're poor, but you help people, and that's the important thing. I don't own a car or a house. I don't get a paycheck. So that, what that does, frees me to help to work 24 hours a day on what I love to do best, and it is to raise hell. Thank you.